Start.
So, hello everyone. Welcome to Deliver Adaptive and Personalized Experiences with SharePoint 2013. My name is Jem Ikun, and I work in the SharePoint Product Marketing Group, and I focus on two areas, web content management and enterprise search. And I think at the end of the session, you'll realize why I work on those two areas and why I'm doing this session. I also have the pleasure to be presenting with Frank today.
Hi, I'm Frank Danielson, and I work with the Search Center of Excellence. And our group is focused on working with customers, helping them understand how they can build dynamic experiences driven by search.
Excellent, Frank. So before we get started, I'll just like to quickly go over a little bit about this session. You know, 2013 is fairly new out there in 2013 for web content management. We have actually released a ton of new features from cross-site publishing to product catalogs to content search for parts to query rules. There's a lot of different pieces, Lego pieces, that we have announced in this release. And this session will not focus on individual every single piece, but it will actually focus on how these pieces actually come together to drive and deliver a really adaptive, really contextual and targeted experiences, both for outside the firewall and for intranet and extranet portal settings as well. So we're going to speak a lot about search as well, because search is the, I would say, the secret sauce in this. But you don't have to be a search expert to understand everything, but it's important to understand some of the new changes, some of the concepts that we have released as part of 2013. Now, saying that, of course, this was a level 200 session, so we will not spend too much time writing code on stage, but instead, like I mentioned, we'll dive into the plumbing, we'll dive into the architecture, how these things actually work together, and at the end of the session, you know, we'll be more than happy to take questions, and please bring us all your questions you can. We look forward to that. So saying that, I'll get quickly started. So when we look at 2013, We really stepped back and said to ourselves, well, you know, SharePoint 2010 has been out there for quite some time. The market has shifted quite significantly, especially in the consumer world, as you know, end users expect and demand more capable, more personal experiences. And the 2010 world, we were a bit more static, I would say, and we really stepped back and said, hey, how can we make 2013 more adaptive? How can we make it more contextual? How can we bring experiences where when Frank goes to a site and when I go to a site, you know, we're two different people, we have two different backgrounds, we have two different interests. Why should we see the same content over and over again? And that was really our motivation, that was really our intention. Also, while we were, you know, looking at that blueprint, on the other hand, we recognized that there was a huge push on the mobile devices area. A lot of customers are now, you know, using their mobile devices, and most sites are actually getting more and more traffic through their mobile devices, and we expect that to increase over time. So we want to tackle some of these pain points as well. So when we looked at all of the investments that we were going to do in 2013, we classified them into three different buckets. That's design, publish, and engage. And I will spend quite a bit of time today with Frank on this session focusing mostly on publish and engage, because that's where I think most of the new enhancements, most of the new patterns and new concepts have been introduced. But we'll definitely touch base on design as well. And when we step back and look at design, it really was about decreasing the SharePoint expertise, the knowledge needed to be able to create really compelling and rich sites. And for that, you know, we have adopted industry standards. We had made sure that, you know, designers can use any design tools they like. There has been quite a bit of investments done in the template framework as well. Because coming from 2010, coming from the static world to a more dynamic world meant that we have to think about how we generate templates, how we make sure that a content is surfaced more dynamically, more agile. So there was quite a bit of investments there. On the publish side, we know for a fact that many customers who use SharePoint 2010 or will be using 2013 for their .com site actually use SharePoint for their intranet and their extranet as well. And because of that, content reuse was really a hot topic on the table for us. We want to, instead of going from a world where we replicate content as you would have done with content deployment, to a world where you alter content once and you could surface that content across different channels. You know, it could be your extranet site, it could be your .com site, it could be a mobile app that you had built. We want to make sure that we unlock the potential of the content, but at the same time, we want to not just focus on managing content, but managing on the experience as well. And when we think about experience, context is everything. The more we know about you as a user, the better we could target content that's relevant for you. And therefore, there has been quite a bit of investments done on both on the published side, when it comes to content reuse, when it comes to multilingual, when it comes to catalog support, but also on the engage side, we have taken quite a bit of advantage of our fast search investments. As you might, some of you might know, in 2010, we had fast search, which was a separate entity, a separate product, separate license. But in this release, now it's fully baked into SharePoint, and everybody gets fast search out of the box, which is a great benefit. But on top of that, it's not just about search, but using the dynamic relevancy, the targeting capabilities of a search engine to target content on a website or a portal. And that's why we worked quite a bit with the FAST team, and that's why Frank is here to show us some demos on how this actually shapes up to be. Now, saying that, I mentioned that I won't spend too much time on design, but I think it's important to cover at a high level what are some of the changes. And the best way to understand it is actually if you look at how it was in 2010 and compare it to 2013. And in 2010, to be able to successfully design a site, you had to be a SharePoint expert. You had to understand how to use SharePoint Designer. You had to know where certain SharePoint building blocks on a page had to be, how web parts work together. And we really wanted to step away from that and go to a world where any web designer, any design agency can create design assets, which could be HTML5, CSS, JavaScript, and provide you a way to import that design assets, design templates into SharePoint, and automatically create the page layouts and the master pages that makes SharePoint work. By doing this, we actually reduced the knowledge needed for a design agency to be able to create a site, and significantly reduced the time to bring a site up and running. So that's part of the design manager, and within the design manager, we also have additional bells and whistles, such as the new device channels, which allows you to target certain set of devices with different page templates. So for instance, you could say that customers who come from a smartphone, I want to use this template, but customers who come from a tablet device, which might have a bigger screen landscape, I wanted to use a different template. And we wanted to provide these capabilities, and that's all part of the new design manager. Also, we have done quite a bit of investments for image and video renditions because it's not just about optimizing the template now for a mobile device. It's also about optimizing the content. If a customer is coming from a 3G connection, chances are you don't want to stream the HD version of that video, and maybe you might want to stream a different rendition of that video. And so that's all of the things that we have thought about when it comes to designing a really great site. And speaking of design, Frank, I think we should look at some of the sites we have for today.
Sure. Thanks, Jim. So we'll switch to the demo. So what I'd like to show you today is two different portals. The one you see here is the Contoso Electronics Superstore, which is an e-commerce-oriented portal. And the idea here is that we'll leverage search to drive this whole experience. And I'll take you through some of the components. A bit later, you'll see the Contoso Knowledge Portal, which is more of an intranet or research portal. And we'll see how we can leverage some of the same content in that setting. So when we start on this electronic superstore, you'll notice the search box at the top. Everybody expects search today, so of course we'll have that as part of the site. But that's not really the focus for us today, because we're going to take a look at how we can leverage search without really the user understanding that they're using search, but leverage search in a way that helps drive that dynamic and engaging experience. You see, we have the navigation menu on top here. This is driven by or managed by the term store, but also coupled with search. Then we have a promotion part here, again, coupled or driven by search. And we have some recommendation sections at the bottom here, which is also driven by search. So each of these components can be individually configured, and you'll have the ability to define then what content should be delivered into each separate part. So let's dive into one of the sections here. And I like cameras, so we'll take a look at the DSLRs. So what we'll see on this page is we have a middle section that highlights some of the products. As the first page you saw, this page here is a template page. And a template in this setting means that we have initially created a layout for this page. But the particular information, the products that we see on screen, as well as the refiners that we see on the left side here, are all defined based on an underlying query. And this query is then contextually relevant to that we clicked on digital SLR cameras. If we take a look at the page, try to edit it, we see that when we open the edit box, we see that we're being notified that this edit action might then potentially affect 33 URLs. And these are actually all the pages in this portal that use the same template. So we can see on top here, we have the physical page address for the template page. But then we have some site navigation items. And these are all the different product categories that we have defined for this site that use this same template page. And we also can see their friendly URLs. So we have friendly URLs now in SharePoint 2013, which is a great SEO feature. And that will also help end users easier understand where they're at on the site. Yeah.
And one other thing to add, Frank, is you know you're showing here 33 pages that are reusing this category template. And the beauty of this is if you look at 2010, you would most likely would have to have 33 different pages to be able to do the same thing. But that meant that you know every time you want to change something, every time you want to add a new category, you would have to go through the whole development cycle. But in this case, because we are having the metadata of the content within SharePoint drive the navigation, we're able to take advantage of this template-based rendering mechanism.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. And that's really powerful. So you can make one change and have that affect a lot of the pages on your site. So let's go back to the page here. And again, we see the products, which are then a component that we call content by search. On the left-hand side, we have the refiners, which are metadata that is contextually relevant to the cameras in this instance. So we see that we have various camera brands, we have colors, we have zoom, etc. If I now wanted to look at, let's say, tablets, and clicked into the tablets category, we can see that further down here, we get other types of metadata associated with tablets. And this is a really neat way to enable end users to navigate the site. Instead of having to search specifically, you can enable through search navigation that is contextually relevant for the end user. If we switch to our Contoso Knowledge Center, what you'll notice here, and before I start going into the details here, this site is actually running in a VM under my desk in Oslo, in Norway. So it might appear a bit slow, just so you're warned. In the Knowledge Center, as I said, this is an intranet or research site. So this is not publicly or consumer-facing. We still recognize some of the products categories that you saw from the Superstore. So we have decided to provide that as functionality in here for the end user. And in addition, we have some research material, and we have HR and IT, so typical intranet content. If I were to click into DSLRs, I cheated a bit and pre-opened, so you won't have to sit and wait. But if we click into our DSLRs, what we see is that we'll have the content from the retail catalog. The rendering is slightly different as the whole page layout. So we have chosen to apply a different style and a different design to this site than we did on the superstore. But it still allows us to use the same information, the same products, and without having to replicate the content. So we're actually now using cross-site publishing feature in SharePoint 2013 to enable this. In addition, we have provided data sheets, so we have more information that's available for the internet user, documentation. We have some blog posts and also product videos. And the neat thing with cross-site publishing is that you then enable a single authoring experience. So you don't have to have content managers copy and paste content from your internet portal and to your store to enable that content online. That's done with a click of a button.
Yeah, and to your point, Frank, I mean, imagine that a content author is adding a new product. In the 2010 world, you know, you would have to update your .com site as well as your knowledge portal. But because now we are actively reusing that single authoring environment, it will automatically be updated both in this knowledge portal and the .com site, which is a huge benefit. And another, to your point, is you didn't mention about mashups. The great thing here is, you know, we're not just showing catalog items here, product catalog items, but we're showing videos, we're showing data sheets, we're showing documentation with all different types of tailoring of display templates added to it. And the great thing is all of these different content sources are actually authored in different environments. Some might be actually coming from third party or line of business systems. We really don't care. At the end of the day, we're able to bring them all together into a single environment. And that's a big benefit of the cross-site publishing, yes. I would say. Yep.
Great.
So perfect. So to that point, I'll go back to my deck. That was a quick demo. We're going to actually spend quite a bit of time on these demo environments today. We only have 5 slides, and one of this slide, which is this one, is the one that we'll always go back to. This is a bit of a map on how all of these different components come together. Initially, you will feel overwhelmed, and that's completely by design, but we will actually dissect this, and we will spend demos and a few moments on talking about each one every of these little blocks. So when we talk about cross-site publishing, When we talk about cross-site publishing and we talk about content search for parts and the fact that you reuse content, it's better understood by looking at the different layers. So if you look at the left of this, you'll see the content and authoring side. So this could be SharePoint content, this could be documents, this could be pages, digital assets, or the new catalogs that we support. It could also be external content as well. It could be line of business, third-party content management systems. It could be any content that's available. We really don't care in this new model where the content has been altered. And we are able to do that because we crawl that content, we have a cache version of that content within the FAST index, and on the right side, you'll see the experience. You'll see the content search for part. And we're able to use this content search for part by hardwiring a query and a display template and surface that content in different settings, in different contexts. So for instance, for the .com site, we were showing the catalogs, the product items, the cameras, and big images. But for the knowledge portal, we were showing them in little images with videos. And this allows us to unlock the potential of the content and reuse that content in across multiple devices or multiple channels. So this could apply for a SharePoint page, it could apply for a portal. It could even apply if you were going to create rich apps on different different platforms, because the same mechanisms will work by using the REST OData APIs, which we have invested. And we actually have some customers who are using this model to drive some apps for different platforms. Now, when we look at content search for parts, imagine a page consists of multiple of these, and each one of these will have its own query and its own display template, just as similarly as you showed in the knowledge portal. So for videos, we use a different query and we use a different template. For products, we use a different query, different template, and this is how we are able to bring different content from different sources into a portal setting, and that's exactly what you want to do in a portal environment. So saying that, I'll hand it over to you, Frank, and perhaps you could show us how the content search report actually looks in real life.
Indeed. So we're back to the knowledge center, and what I like to do is edit one of the content by search web parts. So I'll go into my research category, and we'll choose social science. And again, it's a bit slow, so I've cheated a bit. And in this section, you see that we have, under social science, we have created a video section, and we have some articles. So in this case, we have two articles, but there appears to be no videos. So what I'd like to do is create a query that will allow me to get videos and present those in this section. So I'll go in and edit this page. And when we get to the edit page dialog, we see the videos section here, and we can edit this web part. We'll give it a couple seconds while it's loading. What you'll notice in the edit box, there are two particular elements that I think is important to highlight. One is the display templates, and this is display templates is what defines how the elements will look on screen, how it's rendered for the end user. And then the search criteria is what defines what content we'll actually present in this particular web part. So for now, we'll take a look at the search criteria. So we'll go into the query builder that will allow us to take a look at the query and find content that is relevant. So as you can see here, we have a fairly complex query that apparently returns no results. So what we'll do is we'll try to edit this. And since we're in social, we'll try to search for social. And this thing here is just a pointer to the list where we have videos. So this is part of the query now. We're actually limiting the search results to this particular list. And this is done by metadata in the search engine. So for every piece of content we know, or the search engine knows where that content resides, in which list, on what site, etc. And we can use that to limit the query. So when we test this query, oops, demo ghost. I did that a couple of times before, so. Let me.
And the nice thing about this model is, you as a user who's, you know, putting together this mashup of a portal, you don't necessarily have to know exactly what content is where and, you know, what types of metadata they have, because we do text search. You could say, hey, I want you to return me all of the social videos that have social metadata associated with it. And by doing that, we significantly reduce the time of you talking to different teams, different content editors to figure out which exactly you need. You could actually try it yourself and see it in action in real life. Another benefit of this model is, as you have seen here, we're able to do this, well, once we do it, of course, we're able to do this without having to write a single line of code, because everything is now a part of configuration versus us writing custom code and putting in the content right into the page themselves. And this becomes very, very powerful. You put a space there as well? Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go.
So there we go. It's a bit itchy back in Norway. So, but here we can see we get a few videos returned for them. And we can click OK.
Apply, yep.
And we apply this. And the idea then is we'll then see the videos being rendered in the videos section, which will then appear on the page for the end user. It takes a while to load the thumbnail, so we won't spend any time waiting for that. So let's look at how the display templates might look in the electronic superstore.
Yep, yep. And before you do that, as you notice, it was quite slow, and the reason for that is that knowledge portal is running under Frank's desk, running under a VM. But this demo, contoso.com, is running in Azure IIS, and you're going to see the speed difference now.
Yeah. So we'll go in again. We'll try to edit the page. Again, we see the notification. We choose to edit the template. And as you recall, there are two important sections. One is the query part, and the other is the display templates. So for this part, we'll work on the display templates, and I'll choose to update the item template. So here we can see the current rendering of the items on this page. If I choose, for instance, large picture, and we don't have the large picture in this demo, but this sort of illustrates how it will be shown. So we can easily see, as we're making the change, how that will affect the end result. We can also choose diagnostic, for instance, and we see that we'll get some information about the managed properties that are indexed, and it's contained within the search engine. And this is all delivered back to us, which is a great mechanism for
debugging. And for the ones who don't know what managed properties are, they're just columns on a list. Imagine that we have a list of products, and there we have different columns, and these will all get indexed, and they will be returned to us, which then the display template will look at, hey, I want you to take the title, put it up there. I want you to take the thumbnail, put it there. I want you to take the description, put it on the bottom. So with the display templates, you could decide how you want to present the content versus you actually replicating content.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Perfect. Thanks, Jim.
That's perfect. So let's go back to here to see what we just covered. So in that quick little demo, we actually configured a content search report. You know, we configured the query, we configured the display templates, and as I mentioned earlier, because display templates are basically HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript, you could also apply additional business logic when the results come back and do certain things or integrate it with other type of services. It becomes very, very flexible. But the beauty of this is, although in that example, there was only a single content search report on the page, you could actually have multiple content search reports on a page, just like we had in the portal. And this will be up to your business needs and your imagination on how you slice and dice your experience and how you target users. So that was a quick overview of how we were able to tap into the FAST index and bring the content and apply the templates at runtime, which is quite significant different than how we used to do it in back in 2010. Now, the next topic I'd like to touch base on is analytics and recommendations. So before I go into this slide, though, what I'd like to do is, you know, we talked about how we could surface content from the search index, but we also have done quite a bit of investments in 2013 where we have rewritten our analytics engine. In this release, it's called Analysis Engine, and as you can see here, it actually sits right under the FAST index. And what the analysis engine does is it will actually track the user behavior of users interacting on your site. It will track their journey. So whenever somebody clicks on something, whenever somebody adds an item to a cart, whenever somebody watches a video in a portal, we start to track that user behavior, whether it's an anonymous user or if it's an authenticated user in an extranet or an intranet setting. We're able to track that information, and we start to drive relationships between those items people interact with. And as a result, we do two things. We generate recommendations, which goes back into the FAST index, and we could also show reports and insights on what are popular, what are trending items, what are the most items that people interact with in this given category. We're able to do all of that type of reporting by tracking the user behavior. And this analytics engine is actually quite powerful, and I'd like to walk you through how this actually comes to life. On the right side, you have your experience. It could be your .com site, it could be your portal, it could be a tablet app, it could be a mobile app. We really don't care where the user behavior is happening, because you could either build this, use this from a SharePoint UI, or you could even actually tap into a mobile device, a mobile app, and use the REST APIs to push those events in. And when we say events, event could be a click. For an e-commerce site, it could be add to cart purchase. For a portal, it could be somebody watching a video or downloading a document. It will be completely up to you to define what an event is. And within events, you could also add different scores and different weights as well. For instance, when somebody looks at a camera page, that could show intent and that could show interest. You might give that 10 points. But when somebody adds that camera to their cart and purchases it, you might say that this is a much more valuable event, and you could add more points to that. For a video setting, you could say, hey, if somebody starts watching a video and 10 seconds after they stop watching that video, you could give a negative score. You could say that this is not something that that person liked. And as part of capturing these events, we send these events to the analysis engine, and the analysis engine will actually put these events on log files on disk and use MapReduce collaborative wisdom algorithms to process these events and start to derive relationships to see, you know, which items are related to each other, which items are the most ones that people like based on their context or based on the category. And this is very similar to what you have in Amazon or what you have in Netflix. It's the same principles, but the great thing about this is something that we provide out of the box, and it works great for both a .com scenario as well as inside the firewall as well. So what happens after we generate these relationships, we actually store these back into the FAST index, and using the content search web parts, you're able to surface these recommendations and apply business rules while doing so. And I'll hand it over to you to see how that looks like.
Very good. So again, we're back looking at the Contoso Electronics Superstore. And as you recall from the start of our session, on the front page, we had some recommendations. And we've broken them into sections. So we have one section highlighting some customer favorites. And again, these are all driven by search and configurable by the owner of the site to say what type of recommendations we would like here. The other section is staff recommendations, so we're highlighting other types of products as well. If we go back into our camera section, we can then take a look at one specific camera. And you'll notice, first of all, the data that follows each individual product. And if you recall from earlier regarding templates, though, this is another template where we have, for each product, we're leveraging the same template and presenting information that is delivered from the search engine to this template. On the bottom here, we have created then another content by search web part that provides us relevant content in form of recommendations. So you all know this from Amazon and Netflix style recommendations. The beauty of the recommendations in SharePoint 2013 is because they're search-driven, it also allows you great flexibility in terms of defining what type of recommendations you'd like. You can narrow the recommendations down to a specific category. You can say you want only recommendations within a specific price range. Whatever the preferences you have, and as long as you have the data for it, you can limit or target the recommendations based on that.
Another great thing about the recommendations is you might say, well, that's great, but I mean, what does it do for me? Someone might think that way. But think it as this, you know, when I come to your site today and when I come to your site tomorrow and Wednesday, if I see the same exact content over and over again, chances are I'm going to stop coming to your site. And that's exactly what this helps us with, because now instead of us relying on content authors continuously changing the site every day, we're actually tapping into the collaborative wisdom of the users and understanding what is important, what is interesting, what is exciting, and using that automatically to update the content on the site. It becomes very, very powerful, and it takes a huge burden off content authors and makes sure that, you know, your users, when they come to your site, they continue to discover new content. It increases their stickiness and their engagement, and that's exactly what we wanted to do for both outside the firewall and inside the firewall, which I think you'll be showing right now.
Exactly. So let's take a look at the highlighted videos in the Knowledge Center. And when a user clicks into to watch the video, again, it's a bit slow, so we preloaded the page. We can see the video playing. We don't have any sound, so you won't hear anything. But underneath, we have a few recommended videos. And to Jem's point, these videos, as the users engage with the portal, create new content, watch other types of videos, search, navigate, all that will eventually influence the recommendations. And that's what create that dynamic experience that will make end users come back to see what's new on your portal. and even discover content that they didn't know they were looking for.
Yep, yep. And you know, in this example, you're showing videos, but the same recommendation capabilities also apply for documents. You know, when you're looking at a document inside a portal, like a PowerPoint or Word document, we could actually make recommendations to say, hey, you might be interested with these other documents. Somebody already has done work similar to this. It also applies when you're searching for subject matter experts within the people search. Whenever you search for somebody, we could also make recommendations for other people you might want to follow or you might be interested in. So yet again, we have taken the fast search capabilities, some of these recommendation capabilities we had in fast search back in the day, and have made sure that it actually works horizontally across different workloads, whether it's inside a firewall, when it's a business productivity setting, or even for a .com site, and becomes very, very powerful over time. So let's go back to here. I'll go back to our main slide here. So that was a bit of a on how the analysis engine works and what are some of the benefits out of that. The interesting thing is, you know, on the left I mentioned we have the content, the authoring environments. We have a many-to-many relationship. This content continues to flow through the fast index, and then with the rules you define, with the display templates you define, you could surface this content in different channels, on different devices, on different sites. So that's really powerful. But now you're able to tap into the user behavior. Now you're understanding how users are interacting on your sites, and as part of that, now you're changing the content. You're changing the relevancy. So in some sense, we're starting to close the loop. Instead of a world where in 2010 where you had static pages and you would only publish things in one way, now we're not just publishing, but we're also understanding how users interact with that and circling back into the content, providing other types of content, as in the form of recommendations, but also improving the relevancy of that content as well. So this is really great because this means that you know, what could be popular today might not be popular 6 months from now from on your site or 3 weeks from now. And as a content author, as an IT, as a business owner who's managing a site, you really don't have the cycles and the bandwidth to continuously update your content, continuously surface things that are relevant and exciting. In some sense, we are taking the heavy burden off your shoulders and using machine learning algorithms to do some of the heavy lifting for you. So this is something very unique and something that we're pretty excited about. And we have quite a bit of customers who are actually using that. So that was on, you know, using machine learning to do some of the targeting. But what if you as a user wanted to target specific content to a specific audience? What if you wanted to say that, hey, I want to target this product or this service to users who come from this department, or, you know, users who logged in with their Facebook, who like cameras. I want to target cameras for that type of users. How could you do that? And that's where this new query rule engine comes into play. As you can see here, it sits right between the fast index and the experience layer. And what the query rule engine does is, since we now use fast queries to target content on pages within the content search reports, we could intercept those queries with business logic and context and change and alter them based on who you are. So the goal here is, you know, when Frank comes to a page and when I come to a page, we're two different people. We might log in with our Facebook, or we might log in, you know, as an extranet, look into CRM, and use that information, background, our purchase history, the previous items we interacted with, use all of that information to actually change what we see on the page. In an ideal world, Frank and I would see different things, and that's exactly what we want to do. That's exactly how we're going from the static world to a more dynamic world. And this whole cross-site publishing, this whole content search report, this whole new rule engine helps us to do that. But how does that look in reality? I'll spend a few minutes talking about how this actually comes together. We already spent quite a bit of time talking about fast search and how it actually allows us to cache the content and deliver it within the new templates-based rendering within the content search reports. On the right side, you have the user. You know, user has a profile. It might be coming from a certain device. It might be coming from a different location. It might have a different history. And how do we change the content and the experience based on the context of the user? And that's where the rule engine comes into play. Rules are basically defined as a set of conditions and a set of actions. A condition can be, you know, Does this user log in with Facebook? Does he like cameras? It could be, I have an extranet, this customer logged in. I want to look up the CRM to see, you know, what kind of services this user has signed up to. It could be anything based on your imagination and your business needs. And the action could be to change the relevancy on the page. It could be to show campaigns. It could be show promotions. It could be action to surface content that you want as a business user for them to see. And it will be up to you on how you decide how this shapes up to be. But I think we have some cool demos to show how this actually works.
So in this example, what we like to do is, again, we're back on our Superstore, which is a natural place for creating promotions. Of course, you can use this also in an intranet setting to promote specific types of content, everything from the Cantina menu to the latest white paper that you've produced can be highlighted this way. But in this case, let's go into the mobile phones category. And what I like to do is create a promotion that appears when a user enters this particular category. So it should not apply for any other categories in my on my site, but the mobile phones category. So what we'll do then is I'll go, instead into editing the page, we'll go to site settings, and we'll find the query rules down here. And we'll then see a few query rules that that we have sort of prepared. For each query rule, you'll notice that there is a set of conditions and then also a set of actions. So with regard to the picture that Jem showed, the conditions is then what determines if that particular rule fires or not. And then the actions is what should happen when that rule fires, what should happen on the page. So in this case, as I said, I wanted to create a phone promotion. So we'll click into the phone promotion. And under context, we see that we have categories, so we can define a category. And as you'll notice, or may see, this is actually the term store. So we're now using the site navigation from the term store to define what category is gonna this promotion is gonna fire on. So I go into phones and choose mobile phones. And then we won't set any more more conditions. Under actions, since this is prepared in advance, you'll see that we're creating an image promotion here that will appear then at the top of the page. So this is how we control this. There's also a couple other actions that we won't go into too much detail, but. There are other mechanisms that can be applied as part of the actions as well. And we'll activate it. So this is the publishing section saying when should it be active. So we can also set start and end dates, which is really a great way to target specific promotions. We'll leave that open for now. And we'll save it. Then if we go back to our portal and into our mobile phones section, we have our promotion, 50% discount this week. I think I'll actually buy one.
That's a great deal, Frank. Well, one thing to add to this is, you know, you saw how easy it was, Frank, to just change a rule and manipulate the experience and target a campaign or a piece of content. You know, in this case, let's not think this as a campaign. Think it as a content. You might want to target content for your intranet users. You might want to say, hey, I want to target content to a certain segment of users. You might want to say, you know, if a user's coming from HR, or if a user's coming from IT, or if it's coming from a different department, marketing, I want them to see this specific content. So how can you do that, Frank? Is there a way to target content?
Yes. So again, we'll do this in the setting of e-commerce. But again, all these principles that you've seen can equally well be applied in an intranet setting as well. So what we'll do then is, again, we'll choose a promotion. And this time, I want to create a tablet promotion. So I want to create a Microsoft Surface promotion. But in addition to targeting this particular category, I would also like to target a user segment. And in this example, we'll use IE10 users. So any user coming in with an IE10 browser will see this promotion. So again, we'll go into site settings. We'll do the query rules. We have a Surface RT promotion. We will go into the context and define, again, we need a category. So we'll put down the tablets category. So we have computers.
And if you wanted, we could actually choose multiple categories as well, right?
Exactly.
Yep.
So we choose the tablets for the category. And then I said I wanted to add a user segment. So let's take a look at that. Now, I want to add a segment. I create a segment called iExplore 10. And when I add this segment, again, the term store pops up. And we can then choose. We have then predefined some user agents. We can choose which user agent we want to target. And I target my Internet Explorer 10 and save this. Again, under actions, there's an image being displayed. Under publishing, we just set it active, no date needed. And I click save. What you'll notice is when we go back into this is it now will fire under category tablets and for user segment iExplore 10. So if we go to our site now and try to look at tablets, there's actually no promotions. So we'll try to refresh the screen. And there's no promotions. What can that be? Well, actually, I'm playing a little trick on you here, because I put my browser in IE9 mode, just to show you. So let's try to flip this back to IE10 and see what happens when the page reloads. Fingers crossed it will work.
It better after that setup.
There you go, the new Surface promotion.
Nice. That's great. By the way, related question, how many of you actually got the new Surface RT? I know there was a huge line there. Nice. That's great. That was a spot-on demo there. But I think the most interesting thing is, we went from static to dynamic delivery mechanisms. You know, we leverage FAST now to consume, index the content, and then surfaces in different areas. We also use machine learning algorithms to understand the user behavior and surface recommendations. Furthermore, we have added this extra layer with this rule engine to target content based on different conditions and actions. And although in this example you saw that this was more for e-commerce setting, the same principles apply for any type of content, videos, documents, sites, and applies excellently both inside and outside the firewall. And the great thing is, you know, we could have done this in a different way, but if we made this difficult to do, if we made it in such a way where you had to write code or you had to do deployments or you have to go through huge cycles to do this type of stuff, then we know the adoption would be very low. But the fact that we could do this with a few clicks right within the UI without having to write any custom code, I think is quite significant. It really makes the life easy for many people in many different divisions and departments across organization. And we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
That was great.
It's really also, with regard to the segmentation, is really just the imagination that sort of limits what you can do with regard to targeting. So imagine bringing Facebook social graph into the play here. So you can start targeting friends and friends of friends. And segmenting based on that as well.
We actually have a few customers that are adding Facebook login to their pages. And as part of that, they're looking at your social graph, looking at your friends, and looking which one of your friends has a birthday coming up, and making campaigns and promotions to target them with a product or category product that they might like. And that works great. For inside the firewall, I could give you a few examples where we have a customer who's creating an extranet that's hooked into their CRM, And when their customer logs in, they're able to look up at runtime to see which services, which products this customer uses, and changes the relevancy so that they target relevant content or they try to upsell more services. So this becomes very, very powerful in different settings. Now, let's go back to the slide I had here. I'd just like to recap what we went through and highlight some other areas. Of course, the devil's always in the details, but for our goal here is to make sure that you guys understand what these new building blocks are, what these new Lego pieces are, and how actually they come together to drive solutions and how they make your life easier. And like I mentioned, you know, it was all about, first of us, separating the layers. We wanted to separate authoring from the experience layer, and we wanted to make sure that we could reuse content more effectively, and that's where FAST and the content search part came along. While doing that, we recognized that, you know, for this to work successfully, we have to take out the custom code component out of the mix, and that's why we added the query and the display templates into the mix. And then we said, well, that's great, you know, now we could surface content from different site collections, from different content sources, but what about understanding the user behavior? And that's where the analysis engine came along, the recommendation capabilities came along. And then on top of that, we said, well, that's great that we could understand user behavior, but what if as a business user or what if as an IT user, I want to target specific content to a specific organization or a specific group of users, and that's where the rule engine came along. So these all actually came up as we went through our design phase, as we talked to our customers who use SharePoint 2010, as well as some of our high-end fast customers who used to do similar things, but they will take them years to do custom development to provide some of these capabilities. And we listened to our customers, and you actually talked to a lot of our legacy fast customers, and we took some of those scenarios and baked into this. Now, saying that, of course, this model does raise some questions. And I'll go to the FAQ section here. Oh. And I'll try to go over these questions, and then after that, I'd like to open up for questions because I want to make sure that we address any questions you have. The first question that usually comes up is, you know, when we talk about the design side of things, hey, you know, we have something called device channels, but what about responsive design? Which one is better? Do we use responsive design? Where responsive design means that the page will adjust itself based on the resolution, based on the size of the browser, or do you want to use a specific channel to target an audience? If users are coming from tablets, I wanted to use this template. If they're coming from a mobile device, I wanted to use the template. And the answer is it really depends on what you want to do. But the great thing is, in 2013, both models actually work great. You could have a single device channel that includes a responsive design template. And we have customers who do both. Sometimes they go with that. But then we have some customers who say, hey, Jem, I don't want to have a responsive design because I want to show less content on a small phone screen. I want to show more content on a tablet device. And because of that, the device channel is a great flexibility to have. But you could always go with just a responsive design, and many customers will go with that. It will be up to your design goals. Now, the second topic is, in 2010, we had something called content deployment, and we still do in 2013. And content deployment was a way for you to set paths to say that content authors have authored new sites, new pages here. I want you to deploy them there. And it was very structural. It had a point A and point B. And you had timer jobs. It was a bit complex. The IT had to set it up. It was a bit cumbersome, especially if you wanted to deploy and reuse content in multiple geolocations and multiple different portals and sites. And cross-site publishing takes a whole different approach, as you've seen, where we index the content. Instead of you replicating content, we reuse the content across these different channels. And in some cases, customers ask us, hey, should I use content deployment or should I use cross-site publishing? And our answer is, if you can use cross-site publishing, use cross-site publishing, because it will take a huge burden off you. It will reduce the time of you updating content on the sites. But if there is certain reasons why you need to use content deployment for legacy application reasons, or because you're still trying to migrate from 2010 to 2013, and you still haven't figured out what you need to do, then you could definitely use content deployments as an option. There will be some instances where cross-site publishing will not work. For instance, If you want to surface stock prices or things that get updated very quickly on your page, chances are you don't want to wait for that latency of that content to be crawled and indexed and available. That latency is in the 2 to 5 minute range, depending on how you configure your environment. But there's going to be some content types that you want to update right away. And in that case, you can't really use cross-site publishing. Now, another question that comes up is, well, you know, cross-site publishing, content search for parts, managed navigation, all of these different moving pieces we talked about, but are they available on SharePoint Online as well in Office 365? And the answer today is no. We are working on making sure that we do enable some of these capabilities in Office 365. They are available on-premises, and our roadmap is probably in the next, I would say, next fiscal year, we plan to make these available in SPO. And a content search for a part was something that a lot of customers were asking for, in, especially for portal settings, that is very dear to us, and we will make sure that's available. But for you, for some of you that might say, hey, you know, I don't want to run this on-prem anymore. I can't go to Office 365 because you guys don't support all of this new bells and whistles. Then what do I do? And the answer is Azure IIS. Just like the Contoso.com demo you saw was running much faster than the VM we were running under Frank's desk, we do now officially support SharePoint 2013 and Azure IIS. And it's a great flexibility. It gives you a really great scale-out capabilities. Azure also has a lot of bells and whistles, from ACS to Windows Azure Media Services to many different services they offer. And it could be a good option for you guys who want to, you know, take advantage of moving to the cloud on your own terms with some much more flexibility than you would traditionally get from Office 365. And I think that answers my next question about Azure support. Another question that we get is, some customers really love the recommendation capabilities. And some customers are looking into creating apps, you know, not responsive design, web browser running in a mobile device, but an app for Android, app for Apple, and app for Windows platforms. And they want to see, hey, can I use all of these new capabilities in these apps? And the answer is yes. We invested in open standards with REST and OData APIs. And every single piece of moving piece you saw here today, we fully support REST APIs. So for that includes capturing events from user behavior. You could actually capture when people use your apps and what they do. And you could even surface recommendations right within those apps using the same infrastructure and using the same technology. And this means that you don't have to spend learning new technologies to be able to do some of this. It will basically help you take advantage of a single investment, a single platform, and drive those experiences across multitude of channels. And another topic that comes is migration. You know, sometimes customers say, hey, I'm on 2010. I have a, you know, web content management deployment. I have a .com site. I want to upgrade to 2013. What is the best way of doing that? And what I usually tell them is, you know, there's multiple flavors to the answer depending on the details. But as I mentioned, because we have separated the layers of altering from experience, and we don't care where content is coming from, as long as you could crawl that content, as long as you have a way to tap into that content, put it in the FAST index, you can actually use FAST to surface your legacy content in your new 2013 site. This is very powerful because it's not just, you know, across 2010 to 2013, but it also works across line of business or other content management systems that you might be using. And that's another benefit of separating these layers, because if you encapsulate the complexity in each layer, then it's much easier to change the layers and play around with things. And that's one of the benefits of this whole new architecture and plumbing that we have invested in. Saying that, that's all we had, and we would like to open up for questions now. Yes, can you please use the microphone there? Yeah.
Hello? Okay, based on the upgrading thing, we actually have FAST in our 2010 environment. So how does migrating from that to the 2013 environment, at least with FAST side?
Yeah, so there is no silver bullet that migrates your 2010 FAST to 2013. In many cases, you can migrate your configurations to a certain extent, not everything, but then you would have to recrawl everything in this new environment. Yep. Yes, please.
The analysis part is great. We have a huge portal for
So they're basically just logs on a disk until they get processed. So the raw logs would be on the disk as part of daily and weekly jobs and hourly jobs. The analysis engine will process these logs, create relationships, and store those relationships within the FAST index. So it will do that for you. But the logs will always stay on the disk. And you could say, hey, I want to move that to a different disk. It's something that doesn't have to be on your specific farm. You could actually map that to a different drive and have those logs processed there as well. What you can do is, you can't do that because the analysis engine, as part of MapReduce algorithm, has to divide those files up into different chunks and process them and join them together, divide them, join them together. And because MapReduce works on files, on disks, you can't store them in a database. But what you can do is you could store the output on a database, the end result in a database for reports and insights and other type of things. Yes, yes, and store them in there, and then plug into some BI, fancy reports. You could definitely take it to that next level.
Is there any latency between, like, how big is that?
Well, we have customers that get I would say hundreds of thousands of page views a day, and they will have huge logs. And we have customers who are an extranet portal or intranet portal that are quite substantially smaller, and that happens very quickly. The analysis engine, you scale out based on how big your traffic is. So it's not a single node. If you're a big, lot of traffic's coming, then you add five of those. So you would have to scale out and just test to see, what the sweet spot is.
Okay. Yep. So from the time a log is logged, from the time I can see it?
There could be a delay of a couple hours, yes. Yep, yep. Oh, another question there? Can they be based on?
On templates.
So the contextual refiners are configured in the term store. So we actually double down on term store taxonomy in this release. So in the term store, you say, for this category, I want you to show these refiners. And it's managed there, and everything else is taken care of for you. Yep. Next question.
So I like a lot what I'm seeing here, but as a normal IT guy in an IT department, I have absolutely no idea how to make anything look that good. And I'm thinking, we could use this in our IT help portal, we could use this in a bunch of other places, but normal SharePoint out of the box doesn't look anything like that. How do we, without being able to get the funding to get a real designer, how do we get from SharePoint out of the box to something that looks kind of cool and has this feature set and stuff like that?
Yep.
Because that's the huge gap that I think a lot of us face is, we love to see this, but we're not designers and we don't get the money to go hire designers.
Perfect, perfect. So here's the thing. The Contessa.com portal and the .com site that we showed, we got a design template from a design agency, and it was basically three design files. There was one for homepage, there was one for category page, and then there was one for details page. And without those, it will just look like a traditional SharePoint experience, because everything comes with the web parts. When you add those content search web parts, it's basically the same thing, but when you add the branding on top of it, that's when it looks like Contoso, or that's when it looks like Knowledge Portal. So you could work with any design agency, or you could even just keep it out of the box. You could still use all of these capabilities we showed, the query rules, the content search for parts, all of those are still available out of the box. It's just up to you to say, hey, I want to brand them a little shinier, I want to brand them a little different. You could definitely do that very easily. It's really not that complicated, especially for changing those display templates within the content search for part. They're really snippets of HTML code.
Yeah, so are there like open source, user contributed sort of areas that you would point us to say, even leave the content search web part out of it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But that site didn't look like SharePoint, right?
Yep.
And we have a real challenge on how do we get there, right? Because we don't get any money. The marketing guys get all the money.
Yep, yep.
So how do we get something that looks kind of cool from IT
that's a great point. I do know that it comes with a few templates out of the box with different coloring and schemes, but it's not as nice as you would have liked it to be. Perhaps in the future, you know, we should consider, you know, introducing more templates, more colorful, more rich templates. I think that's a great feedback. Yep.
Thank you.
Another question there?
Yeah, I have a quick question. Is it possible to pre-populate the term store through the backend?
Is it possible to pre-populate the term store? Absolutely, yes. Yes, you could do that. And you would pre-populate the term store for, you know, managing your segments, managing your categories. You could definitely do that, yes.
My question is about managed metadata navigation, because the issue I had was when you move the developed site, like let's say you move the site from development to the production,
it
breaks the navigation because the term store and everything was in the development side, but not in the, because when you do a site collection backup or export a site, it doesn't export the navigation too.
Here's a great thing about that. So we have something called a catalog, content catalog. It's a different list. It's list on steroids. And the great thing about this is this list can be subscribed to from another farm. It's called connecting a list, catalog list. And when you connect that list, it will automatically also update the term store, so you could reuse that term store that the initial authoring environment had, so you don't have to manually migrate your term store from, you know, farm A to farm B. So I would suggest looking at connecting catalogs.
Okay, so that but still, that would be looking on the development site, development server, not on the production, right?
So in most cases, customers don't connect from development to production. They connect from staging to production. So I would go one hop to staging and from staging to production. Yep.
Thanks.
Another question there?
Yeah, just a quick one. Outstanding stuff. Quick question on the query. When you brought that query up and you with the video,
yes.
Snapped in there, got it fixed up. Obviously, you knew what you were doing. I'm thinking, you know, you're talking about no developers. If I put a kind of a web designer on that and they see that query, they'll kind of have a heart attack.
They will.
Are there tools? Do you have tooling built around that, like some kind of query builder built around that, or do you know third parties that do?
So that's a great point. I think the query builder is still a bit complicated. I would have liked it to be more simple to use. But in many cases, when you work with a designer, the designer will create you the design templates, which you import in the design manager. It automatically creates the page templates and the master pages. And then if you're going to rely on the designer to manipulate the individual web parts, I think that's something that an information worker who understands where content's being altered, who understands what type of content's available, I think it should be more of the information worker versus the graphic designer who places the content within those segments on the page.
Cool. All right, thank you.
No problem. Another question there?
Yep. So a lot of the things that you were showing, I think, are really good for providing some self-service to a lot of the different departments and things like that.
Yep.
Do the rules and other pieces have deployment mechanisms behind them so that if an application is developed from an IT point of view, that it can be repetitively deployed?
Yes, so the rules also have a REST API associated with it as well. So you could definitely write some scripts to, you know, pre-populate those rules and you know, transfer them from, you know, your dev to production or staging. You could definitely do that. Excellent. So if there are no other questions, that was our session. Thank you all for coming.